Hello, regulars. You're listening to Floor by Floor, a Tower of God podcast discussing the latest chapters of the webtoon. I'm Reziot.
And I'm Viraline.
And we're your hosts. Welcome to the 14th floor, where we'll be discussing chapters 580 and 581, or Season 3, Episode 163 and 164. So, let's start with Chapter 580's summary.
The chapter opens with Lobodon introducing himself and Yama being worried about how strong he looks, yet remaining too prideful to stand down in front of the other beastkin. Yama tells Lobodon to come beg for forgiveness, and Lobodon says that won't happen. Yama tells him to free the beastkin, and Lobodon says he can't do that either. He then asks Yama if he's going to disgrace his father, who was a warrior willing to send his kin to war. Yama explodes with anger, telling him what's honorable about serving that human garbage called the family head. Lobodon calls Yama prideful, but such talk won't get him forgiveness from the family head. Doan and Yasracha step up, and Yasracha introduces himself as a former corps commander. He asks Lobodon to make a deal with them, because if the three high rankers were to fight, they'd wipe everyone out but Lobodon himself. He can control the beastkin, so he should consider making a deal. Lobodon thinks it would be a bad idea to make an enemy of Yasracha, so he agrees to hear him out. They go to Lobodon's quarters to talk. Yama says he wants the beastkin freed because they want nothing to do with the war between the 10 families. Lobodon says he can't do that because they need them. Yama bluntly states that they must then fight before Yasracha cuts in to continue negotiating. He asks Lobodon why he is away from the mothership, and Lobodon answers that it's classified. Yasracha tells him that they are a neutral party, so they'll keep their secrets. Lobodon considers it, and then tells him they are after a book that the Pobedal family head has kept hidden for a long time in a secret library. They want to use that book to negotiate a truce with the Pobedal family head. Yama asks if that would be going against his family head's orders, and Lobodon answers that the war was started by Jihad. Since the war was not wanted by the family head, Lobodon opposes it. Yasracha says he now understands where he's coming from and says they will bring Lobodon the book. Yama yells, "What? Why should they?" Yasracha ignores him and tells Lobodon that in exchange for retrieving the book, he wants Lobodon to let the beastkin go. He turns to Yama and tells him he understands he doesn't want to help the Lopobia, but this is the best way to save everyone without risking losing them. Yama asks, how can he trust Lobodon? And Yasracha says, once they get the book for the truce, the beastkin are no longer needed and he will let them go. Lobodon accepts their plan. Catan shows the group a map of Lot, the ship they are to infiltrate. Catan says it may look like an ordinary village ship with no defenses, but they're sure the book is in there somewhere, based on the intel they've received from a reliable source. Yasracha asks, if it's in such a place, why send such a large force? Catan says they were going to send the forces to the nearby ship base, Victor, to create a diversion while Catan infiltrated the village alone to steal the book. They needed a big enough army to force the Pobedal to exhaust their forces until they got the book out. Yama angrily shouts that they were planning on using the beastkin as meat shields, and Catan says, that's correct. They consider their own family more valuable than the beastkin, just like Yama considers the opposite. Yama clicks his tongue and asks how the plan is changing then. Catan says they're taking Doom hostage since they can't fully trust them. Yama is okay with that, and even wonders if he's valuable enough as a hostage. Doan will go to the battlefield, and Yasracha and Yama will go get the book. Yama is about to make a comment about Yasracha's condition, but Yasracha shushes him. Yama says he doesn't want to babysit him while he gets the book, but Yasracha says he won't hold him back. Catan tells them to head out to the village before the victor finds them. Lobodon's forces would do their best to avoid direct conflict and only build up a defensive line to draw their attention. If they want to save the beastkin, they should bring the book back as soon as possible. Their supplies and ship are prepared for them to leave tonight. Yama grumbles that he doesn't care if Yasracha dies or not, and that he's not going to save him. Yasracha tells him that's how he wants it. We switch back to Tromrai. His goat beast is still going wild, burning up Pobedal soldiers. Tromrai is still looking for the certain ship, when he gets a message via pocket. Gustong is telling him to stop messing with the insects and come to him if he's looking for something. Chamrai wonders if he's had Gustong's contact all this time and forgot about it. Chamrai travels to the location Gustong sent him and finds the ship he's been looking for. Gustong taunts him for being impatient and rampaging when he usually likes to stay shut in. Chamrai asks him what he's planning and what is that ship. Gustong responds that he doesn't know, but all he can say is that he's tired of people acting like nothing happened after, quote-unquote, the incident. Chamrai asks, does he mean what happened to En-Jahad? Gustong says yes. To keep their secrets hidden, they hid his and Blossom's daughter in a deep, dark place. And then the chapter ended there. It was a really big cliffhanger, but fortunately, we can roll right into chapter 581's summary.
Chamrai continues speaking to Gustong. En-Jahad was the most gifted among the princesses, but she was unable to control herself and was sealed by Jahad. What she found out was not a secret, but something best left forgotten. Chamrai goes on that Jahad already got his punishment for that, and they all hurt each other equally after that. It was then that they realized they should only worry about maintaining their own relationships and should draw a line between themselves and outsiders. That's why they consider everyone not like them as insects, because as long as they focus on themselves, nothing else would divide them. He asks Gustong, you were in agreement too, were you not? Gustong says he was, as long as they all let it go. But there is always one friend who sees the cracks in their friendship and finds it unbearable enough to want to split it wide open. They are stagnant and meaningless since they closed off the highest floor. They've learned to seal away their memories they want to forget through their own methods to the point that they forgot why they've stopped. They lack knowledge, and he hates that. Chamrai asks Gustong why now does it bother him, and Gustong says that he received a prophecy after the incident at the Floor of Death, and then shortly after the Irregulars arrived. Chamrai assumes Gustong wants to kill them, and that's why he wants the Irregulars. Gustong shows Chamrai a device that looks like an Apple Watch that the Irregulars brought out from the hidden floor. He's not sure how it works yet, but he believes it's tied to their fears, and it has the power to destroy Jahad and the 10 family heads. He will call Chamrai to an important place, but he doesn't know if he'll kill him yet. He lacks knowledge, so he plans to get his memories back by finding the book he sealed them in. He'll decide then, so he tells Chamrai to be patient. Chamrai asks why must he wait on Gustong to decide on everything? Why should he wait to be killed or not? That's why Gustong got dumped. Gustong is offended and creates a maze of books around Chamrai. Chamrai recalls the rules of the maze. He must search the books in the maze and speak the answer. He could just break out, but he doesn't know what he'd do then. We get a flashback to when they were kids. Chamrai reminisces that they used to make bets using the maze. Whenever he and his tiny divine beast solved the maze, Gustong would make a bigger one. Chamrai tells his octopus beast they'll play along. As the octopus searches through books, Chamrai wonders why Gustong is so curious about what they tried so hard to forget. The past still causes him pain, so he wants to destroy what remains of it so he can be at peace in the present. If Gustong wants to destroy the present, then Chamrai will do his damnedest to kill him. We move to the next morning and are introduced to the captain of Victor, high-ranker Po Bedao Hugo. She's looking at a spread of luxury shoes and scoffing that they're not good enough. Her standards of luxury don't lie in their price, but in their beauty. She calls the shoes before her expensive junk and orders the man who brought them to get out of her sight. Vice Captain Biribiri comes up to report that there's a Lopobia fleet nearby, Lobodon's fleet, to be precise. Hugo is shocked and wonders what they're doing out in the middle of nowhere. Biribiri suggests they might be lost, but Hugo calls it an excellent opportunity to face off against Lobodon. Biribiri thinks Hugo is insane while wearing a straight face. We cut to the village ship Lot, where Yama and Yasracha are being checked in by security. Security identifies them as Mr. Wolf and Mr. Meow and verifies their pockets. Very subtle, guys. Yama comments on how easy it was to get in. Are they sure the book is here? Yasracha says maybe that's what makes it a good place to hide it. Yasracha suddenly doubles over in pain, and Yama is alarmed, but but Yasracha tells him not to worry and to keep going. The scene moves to the central library, where two patrons are gossiping about the new handsome librarian that arrived from the mothership. Suddenly, the new librarian, High Ranker Popadal Guskar, passes by with a stack of books, and they greet him. Guskar drops off his books and gets a pocket call alerting him of two suspicious beastkin entering the ship. The caller asks if they should arrest him, and Guskar tells them not to, or else it'll look like something does happen in the village. And the chapter ends there.
When you're reading it, it seems like these chapters go incredibly fast, but they're so packed with information, it's incredible. Especially the second one of this week.
Finally got some answers to our questions.
Yeah, we finally find out what Lobodon's after and what his plan is. After wondering so long what the heck he's trying to do and how it relates to Traumrai. In the end, it doesn't relate to Traumrai at all. He just wants to try and stop this war to save his people. And now we have Yama and Yasracha conveniently going out together to try to recover this book he wants to strike a truce with. Yasracha always looks good in a ponytail to me. But what really cracked me up this chapter was them being referred to as Wolf and Meow. Come on.
And I love that the guard had to think about it.
Which one's Wolf and which one's Meow? And Yama's like, can't you just tell? And while we've got Yama and Yasracha off to recover this book, I find it interesting what could happen once this operation goes underway. Bomb's coming to find Lobodon with Kun and Rock. Will he show up during this fight? Will Kieran further complicate things in this theater when he shows up on Bomb's heels? Will Bomb even get to meet Lobodon in the first place without Kieran interrupting him? And then we have these other two Popadal high rankers introduced, Hugo and Giscar. Obviously, they'll be involved in this mess because they're right in the center of it. And honestly, a part of me kind of hopes they don't die because they're kind of cool. At least Hugo, to me, gives me just these drama queen vibes, and I don't want to see her go.
She's got quite a colorful personality.
And just like her stylish personality, she's dressed in full Chanel. Someone actually looked up the outfit that she's wearing.
How many thousands of dollars would it be?
1.9K on the shoes alone, apparently.
Oh boy.
I'll go make my own. But of course, the biggest things we've seen in this chapter are definitely the interactions between Gustong and Traumrai. Once again, it seems like they can only bring out their true personalities in each other's presence. When it comes to anyone else, they are just utterly indifferent. And then we get a panel of young Gustong and Traumrai. They both look like the most just stereotypical nerds on Earth. But yeah, Gustong actually went on to say that he too is looking to recover his memories. That is a huge lore bomb, just by that line alone. Does this imply that all of the family heads have gone and sealed their memories? And it's interesting that they've sealed their memories. They haven't actually destroyed them or purged them. They just put them away for safekeeping, like they were going to deal with it in the future. Or at least that can be assumed with what Gustong and Traumrai have done with their own memories. So who knows? There may be one of the family heads among them that fully removed their memories and doesn't care to remember anything. Or one, or more, that might fully remember absolutely everything. So it makes you wonder, why? What was so bad about it all that they don't want to remember any of it? Was their infighting that bad? Was what they traded for immortality that horrible? Was what was on the 135th floor that atrocious? Or could it have been as simple as the 135th door is the last gate of the tower, the absolute top, and none of the great warriors wanted to give up what they had in the tower, and thus have pretended there's nothing else up there to keep the status quo of the tower that they established? Who knows? It's always been easy for us as readers to have jumped to the conclusion that their blocked out memories have to do with Arlene and V, and their conflict with Jahad. But this chapter seems to hint at something far greater than that, as if these missing memories also have more than just those events. Like, there's an even bigger puzzle missing pieces here that are on a far larger scale than what we may have assumed all these years. And then comes the bracelet in Gustong's possession, retrieved from the hidden floor. With the bracelet revelation, does this mean that the family heads are effectively threatened with mortality? That, yes, Gustong does want them all to die, or quote-unquote die. I phrase it like that because, well, once again, Chamurai Gustang may die at the end of this, but with the discussion of their memories and the information contained within effectively being the evidence needed to judge life and death, this concept of death might move on to a figurative sense, where what's going to die is the person that they currently are, in favor of being replaced with the person they will be, or used to be, when they regain their memories. And who knows, they might end up dying physically after that.
Just based on Trauma Ray's hesitance to get his memories back, it does feel like the metaphorical kind of death of this big emotional trauma that they would inherit again.
And on the subject of all of them having discovered means to seal away their memories, could it be that the bracelet may be the key to Jihad's missing memories if he too decided to purge his own? Which it seems like he definitely did. There's a whole big can of theory worms. A popular Jihad theory was that Wang Nan and the other Jihad bros, clones, or whatever they were fragments of Jihad that he created to either monitor the tower from different perspectives or to lose some of his memories, as hinted all the way back on the hidden floor. Remember, Data Jihad's memories were immediately purged the second he heard Arlene's name, because Data Jihad, quote-unquote, heard something he wasn't supposed to hear, triggering that purge. Could the bracelet be a key to this? Could Wang Nan's target with a talking sword be whoever holds this bracelet? And Gustang wants to give this bracelet to insects, as he says. You can go down a whole vortex of theories with that one. I'm going off topic with that, so I'll leave that right there as food for thought. Well, moving on to some other content in the chapter, there are two things I kind of wanted to point out. The first was the introduction of this little village ship named Lot. Besides it looking like a Minecraft build, the name itself suggests it's a biblical reference. As we know, talk tends to allude to a lot of that, and it could provide maybe a little bit of insight of how the rest of these chapters might go. Alright, so consider this. In the Christian Bible, Lot was a righteous man who came to settle in a village known as Sodom, close to another village named Gomorrah. Long story short, he was visited by three spirits, God and two angels, who told them they were going to judge these two villages because they were doing a whole lot of bad stuff. If they were able to find a few righteous people living there, God would spare everyone's lives, but if not, they were going to burn them to the ground. Lot was known to be a good person, so God warned him and the angels would spare his and his family's lives if they left now. But Lot didn't want these people to die. That's messed up. So he begged the angels to spend time there to determine for themselves and see that these people were just people and didn't deserve to die. But the people themselves ended up showing their true colors, and the villages were doomed to destruction in a rain of fire and brimstone. Lot and his family were allowed to escape so long as they ran and never looked back. But at the last moment, Lot's wife turned around and looked at the destruction, and for her folly, was turned into a pillar of salt. As mentioned, I bring this up because it might give us a bit of insight of how the battle might go. A lot of people are gonna die. A lot of stuff is gonna blow up. Maybe a prominent person will meet their end here. Yasracha, maybe? Besides these other high rankers. Someone's going to judge whether these people should live or die, and who else has been constantly alluded to being godlike? That's right. Bomb. He may utterly despise being called a god. He's always rejected it. But in the end, a lot of things tend to focus on him. A lot of events kind of have him as their axis. So his presence there might end up being judgment time for a whole lot of people. That is, of course, unless Kieran decides to stop him and everything I'm saying is just crackpot theory, but here we go.
That's what we're here for.
And I bring another crackpot theory. Just the second thing I wanted to point out. So Popadog Griscard. I like his design. He's kind of cool looking. He also seems very austere, except for one thing. He seems to have a brown mark running down his throat. On one panel, it almost looks like he has a little notch sticking out of it, reminiscent of a key. There's some theories running around in the fandom right now that he might be the key to getting Gustang's memory book, if not the holder of it himself, maybe sealed into him or something. Kind of messed up. But it might just be a characteristic of Shane Sewer abilities. We'll see. But despite as austere as he seems, and kind of polite based on his interaction with the other two librarians, as a side note, if translated properly, his name seems to be from a Norman adventurer named Robert Guiscard, known for being the conqueror of southern Italy, nicknamed Terror Mundi. Well, if that isn't concerning.
I think behind that polite personality is probably another insane character.
If we think Hugo is crazy, this guy might blow us all out of the water. Anyway, I'm kind of hoping that in the next chapter, we'll see more about Gustong and Tramurai's past, and maybe we'll get more of an insight on the other family heads, and maybe we'll get more than just a silhouette of N this time. Because although N was mentioned, that was it. And a lot of us are just like, N? Where? What? Finally? And then we didn't really get anything.
Got a little confirmation of what we already knew, that, you know, she's been sealed up somewhere. But it does seem like with the plot moving towards unlocking these memories, we will get more information. Just not yet.
Not yet. But there's speculation that Ba might be the one to go unseal her, which is something that's been speculated for a very long time. But it seems a little more concrete now.
He does seem to like unsealing things.
The master of unlocking. Hopefully he doesn't get turned into a sandwich. I do wonder if Siu is going to keep up that one little tidbit that he wrote in a blog post once, which, if you didn't know, his blog posts have been purged. He once mentioned that N was sealed away with some incriminating evidence regarding Gustong and Blossom. She's got some dirt or tea on her parents, and we'll probably get that spilled. Of course, it might be far away in the future yet.
I want to learn more about the incident.
The incident where N supposedly went mad and started acting erratic. Then just started killing people, and she was eventually subdued and sealed away. And then Jahad got punished for it? That's a big incongruence to me. Jahad getting punished for it.
Yeah, that seems so unlikely at this point in time.
I think for the longest time, we as readers have placed Jahad like on a pedestal above the 10 family heads. I mean, he's the king of the tower. The king can never do any wrong, right? But like, it seems as though the family heads see themselves as being on more of an equal level to him. They're each other's checks and balances now. So hearing about Jahad being punished is kind of shocking. But what exactly happened for this to happen?
And for the all-powerful family heads, what even would a punishment mean? Did they just slap his wrist and be like, "Bad Jahad, no soup for you."
No soup? That is a good point to bring up, though. What kind of punishment could you give an immortal being?
Maybe we'll find out at some point.
Someone needs to find this book. The Leviathan finally needs to show up on screen. Or we just need to hear more of their conversation.
And we still gotta remember that Bomb has that side quest to collect those three dragons. So that's gonna tie into this somehow.
I genuinely completely forgot about them. There's just so much going on at any given time in this plot. Oh my god.
So we got Bomb trying to get three dragons. Also trying to go meet Lopadon. We got Yama and Jasrasha trying to get a book. But we also see Gustong trying to get the book. And we got Tramurai trying to not die.
Pent up in a nerdy maze trying to find answers his own way, but also wanting to destroy them instead of facing them head on.
And we got introduced to these new characters that are probably just going to be fodder in this war. We've got a lot of little stories going on at the same time, but the story is moving forward, so we'll see what we focus on next week.
I hope next week gives us more answers as it did this week.
Some juicy answers, please.
Please, it's about time, SIU. We need it, please.
Thanks so much for joining us, regulars. We'll see you on the next floor.
Have a good one.
Goodbye.